Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
All right, Hall of Fame game last night, 21-17, the final score. The Bears beat the Texans. About three quarters they played before the rains and the lightning and the thunder showed up, and they just went ahead and canceled the fourth quarter of that game. So there's probably a handful of guys that were hoping to get an opportunity to show a little something, put some film out there, that didn't get a chance to do it. They'll have to wait till Friday, a week from today, against the Pittsburgh Steelers to do that. Are there any things, Seth, from the game last night that are relevant to the upcoming season, players or position groups that you come away from last night's game feeling significantly better about after watching last night's game?
Okay, significantly is an interesting part. Let's leave significantly to the side because it was, you know, they were playing against backups.
Sure.
But the left guard in the center position, I feel better about them just in terms of not making any mental errors that were glaring that I noticed just off the bat on the TV copy. I thought they were playing in unison. I thought they were getting push at the line of scrimmage. So those are your prospective starters going against backups, but doing a pretty good job of it. Mm-hmm. And in pass protection, I thought they were pretty solid. Sloak did a good job of, you know, using multiple bodies at times, other times using the boot. But even on the play where Mills had to scramble, that wasn't a protection issue. That was just a good play by the defensive end, not biting on the play action. So that part I feel good about. And then Xavier Hutchinson is the other guy that, you know, I'll credit. Cody Stutes was the guy who was most skeptical of John Metchie being just looking so much different athletically. So Cody Stutes from Houston Football, he and I disagreed a little bit on John Metchie. Like, John Metchie didn't show up at all as a receiver. Now it's one half of football, so that happens with great receivers at times. But Xavier Hutchinson, he got great separation, made some nice catches on, you know, not perfectly thrown footballs, and was, I think, looked like somebody that maybe they can depend on.
Yeah.
And then Ben Skoranek also did a lot of what we've seen in practice. It was just really reeling in some difficult passes at times.
Yep.
And making dicey situations into good situations.
You've watched every practice so far. You've been at every single training camp practice. So you've watched Metchie. You've watched Hutchinson. I'll even throw Skoranek in there as well. I think these are all guys that are battling for that fifth, sixth, maybe seventh receiver spot, whatever. If there was only one spot left in your Nick Caserio today, today is cut down day, and there's one spot left, and you got to pick, I'll just make it Mechie and Hutchinson for now. If you had to pick between those two, who would you take right now?
I would say based on just the combination of, I guess, consistency throughout camp and then the performance last night, I would say Xavier Hutchinson. Mm-hmm. With Mechie, what I'm hung up on is just still the upside. I think there is just like a nastiness to the way he's running routes and moving. But a lot of that shows up more in 7-on-7 and in 1-on-1s than it does necessarily in the team periods. And Mechie's had quite a few drops in team practice as well. But I look at the upside and I just keep in reserve the fact that he's still showing progress from coming back from cancer.
Yeah.
That's it's just hard to figure exactly like how do we project that on the graph? Like where do we expect it to stop or plateau? And I don't think we've seen that plateau yet. So I'm really in a bind between those two guys right now.
I wonder if, and I say this knowing that Nick Caserio leaves the door open for any possibility when it comes to trades or signing guys, anything that he feels like makes the team better, he's here for it. I do wonder if floating Mechie's name out there just to see what the trade market would be like for him. You're not going to get a second round pick back for him or anything like that, but there may be some teams willing to give you something based on kind of, you know, based on spec.
Potential upside. Well, no, this would be a lot like, you know, who the White Sox in baseball might be interested in right now. Where, hey, a team that's not quite there and they're trying to play a lot of young players might look at a guy like Mechie as like, all right, you know, we don't know if we can really rely on him right now, but there's something there. So, yeah, I could see teams being very interested in him as a younger prospect. That it just if they're not necessary if they're in that phase of their development.
Yeah, because you've got a ton of bodies in camp. You know what I mean? Like you're gonna Mechie or no Mechie, you're gonna wind up with a pretty deep receiving core. You know, like because you got three elite level wide receivers. You know, or close to it. You got Noah Brown, who, when healthy, is a very, very solid vet. And then you've got a bunch of other really intriguing guys at the back end. You know who I'd call? I'd call Carolina. That's a team that's in a rebuilding phase. They've got draft cap. You know, they're through with the Bryce Young trade, so they've got all their draft capital. And Bryce Young played with John Mechie at Alabama. They were teammates. I'm guessing they get glowing reports from Bryce Young about John Mechie. That would be a guy he might be comfortable throwing to. Get a fourth rounder for him or something like that.
Yeah, like if it were this time last year with the Texans where they weren't jam-packed with wide receivers, I would be really excited about John Mechie for the potential for the future.
Yes.
It's just that right now he's up against this ceiling of, you know, guys above him who are just A, more experienced. You got your top three guys, and then B, just either more consistent or also really provide you something on special teams like Skoranek. So that's the huge quandary you're in. It might be a numbers game with him.
What were the issues defensively last night from what you saw?
So I think the linebackers really struggled with run pass recognition. There were times where the linebackers were still had their heels like planted in where they started the snap as the running back was at the line of scrimmage. The defensive line at times did some really good things. It's hard sometimes in this defense because you want your defensive lineman to get penetration, and sometimes it looks like they're getting washed, but in fact they're getting deep into the backfield, and then the linebackers are supposed to play off of that. So I wasn't really impressed with many of the linebackers. I mean, a few of the individuals made good plays here and there, but as a group, you know, without having gone back and watched the linebackers specifically, as a group, I didn't think they did as good a job. The fact that Henry Toa didn't play at all through the end of the third quarter, I think, unless there was an injury involved, I think that's consistent with what I've seen in camp where he's had opportunities to play with the ones, but he just doesn't look nearly as athletic as four or five other guys that also have experience that they've been rotating in at linebackers. So I think I think Henry Toa is, unless it was injury that kept him out, yeah, I think he's fighting to make the team.
The Toa Toa one is a big one for me, just in terms of why didn't he play last night? And I never got a look on the sidelines because I hadn't noticed he wasn't out there. I never got a look to see if he was in, you know, the white Texans T-shirt that all the people who weren't playing were wearing. Everybody was wearing the same T-shirt that was inactive last night. They were all wearing the same gear. I didn't see if Tua Tagovailoa was suited up. I'm going to assume he wasn't suited up because, as you point out, he has been running with the ones in camp and practice and whatnot. It would seem strange if he were suited up and the plan was to play him in the fourth quarter of that game, you know?
I thought Marcus Harris, the sixth round pick, the defensive tackle, the one thing that really stood out was just how quickly he gets across the line of scrimmage. And that's what he did in college. He had a couple plays where he caused that one in that short yardage situation. I don't think he made the tackle, but he created the penetration that led to the stuff. So he flashed a little bit, and I haven't been able to watch him individually every play yet, but I think what you drafted him based on showed up in the game. A lot of times that's just what I want to see in the first couple of games. It's like, all right, is this guy come as advertised?
Right.
He's got some developing to do. He's undersized, but it does look like he can be a grenade in the backfield.
Yeah. He's all SEC. I mean, you know, like there's something there. Along those lines, I'm excited so far about this rookie class. You know, like, I think given where they were picking, you know, they voluntarily moved back from 23 to 42 to get the pick that ended up turning into Stephon Diggs. But Kamari Lassiter has looked good. They clearly think he's ready to be a starting cornerback. He got the veteran treatment last night, you know, so they clearly think he's ready. You know, Blake Fisher, when he's not going up against Will Anderson or Danielle Hunter, I thought Blake Fisher looked real solid last night. You know, again, it's against the Bears backups, but he's a rookie. These are the check boxes that you're doing. Kalen Bullock did some things last night. Kate Stover did some things last night. Good class so far.
I know I'm in the minority on this. Clint and I might be the only two people in Houston that feel this way. And I don't know exactly how Clint feels about it, but I just know that he's very skeptical of Davis Mills in a lot of ways. I thought Davis did some really good things last night. It wasn't enough for me to still be concerned about some of his bad decision-making or his general inaccuracy. The box score looks great. The results were good, but he easily could have thrown a couple of interceptions. He squandered some easy passes. He made a really weird – it's just a weird decision. I almost would prefer a bad decision than a weird decision to throw to Skoranek when he could have run for 5 yards, no problem. Like, some of these things where he just kind of seizes up in the moment, it makes me nervous because I want my backup quarterback to be solid, steady, and consistent, but I don't need him to be spectacular. Every spectacular play that Davis Mills makes, I feel like he offsets it with a really curious decision or a really inaccurate throw. We've seen this in training camp, Sean. We've seen some impressive throws, but then I was like, oh, who airmailed that one 10 yards over the receiver's head? Yeah. You look back, oh, it was Davis Mills. Yeah. Okay.
He used to be Jeff Driscoll. It was a really dangerous camp when Driscoll and Davis Mills were both out there throwing passes.
Driscoll was like ten times worse than any human being I've ever seen.
It was really
I
bad.
Was just astounded that he was still. I was like, why is this guy on the practice field? What is going on here? Why are you masquerading this dude as an NFL quarterback?
He's still in the league. He started a game for the Browns last year at the end of the season. It's crazy.
He seems like a hell of a guy, but I hate everybody who endorses him. I like him, but I hate everybody who endorses him or thinks that he's got anything to him.
I'm with you. Text message. Kalen Bullock caused a fumble. The ball was bouncing behind him while he was celebrating.
Yes.
Man, a lot of people saw this. Bullock needs.
I'm glad a lot of people noticed that. I was afraid I was the only one.
No, we got a lot of texts about it. Bullock needs to stay engaged in the play. He could have picked up the fumble, but the Bears picked it back up because he was celebrating.
Yes, we understand.
Yeah.
It was a little bit like Jalen Petrie last year in the Jaguars game. Was it the Jaguars game when there was a big play down when the offense was backed up, and Jalen Petrie went off celebrating into the tunnel while the play was still going on, like because the tackle hadn't actually been made yet. These are the things you worry about sometimes. That in the preseason, I'm not as worried about it. It's just an excited rookie doing his thing, but it'll be addressed by D'Amico, and just hopefully this was youthful exuberance because that was a really nice play by Kalen Bullock otherwise.
I think there's very few people that agree with this text, and I know you don't, but just for the sake of, in case there's other people that feel the same way, Text message. Is Case going to make the team? Didn't look like it last night.
I thought Case looked better than Davis.
Yeah, Case might have been their best quarterback last night.
Yeah, I really do. I thought Case looked better. I would still feel more comfortable with Case Keenum as the backup, just like the Texans did last year. This is the other one where I wonder if I'm taking crazy pills. I don't understand how people are convinced that the Texans, who last year told you that Davis Mills was their backup quarterback, and then when they needed a backup quarterback, didn't play Davis Mills. Like, why are you believing the depth chart? This is like believing Joe Espada talking about an injury, or Jose Abreu. It's just, I think they're giving him the opportunity to earn that role. But all of the things that prevented them from playing him last year, they were out there last night. It was one half versus backups on a bad football team, and there were too many glaring issues to make me feel better about the good stuff that I saw from him.
You know why it is, Seth? You know why people feel that way? Why people are ignoring what you just brought up about last year? Is that I feel like that's the only time where we've been lied to by D'Amico Ryans. That was like D'Amico Ryans is usually openly honest, or you can tell by the length of his answers how he feels about certain players or certain things. And it just is an example, real quick. He gets asked about Kamari Lassiter, and he will talk for a minute long. He got asked about Jeff Okuda the other day. It was a 7-second cut about how he's competing.
You know what, though? This is the thing, Sean.
Yeah.
I remember this well. D'Amico actually did not lie about this. This is when the other time I felt like I was taking crazy pills was that I was sitting there. I'm like, no, nobody has said that Davis Mills is going to start the Tennessee game. Mm-hmm. And nobody asked D'Amico directly because everybody just assumed it. And I'm looking around like, why is everybody so convinced? No, the team hasn't actually said a damn thing. D'Amico said he was ready to play and all this stuff, but he never actually said, no, Davis Mills isn't starting the Tennessee game.
But the depth chart, you know, the depth chart said he did.
D'Amico makes the depth chart.
Okay. You know, they
were lying to us the whole season, basically.
Yeah.
Just with the depth chart that Davis Mills was the backup quarterback.
In the end, I guess they were. Yeah. Payne and Pittman.
Brett Rippon was the best quarterback on the field.
He was really good, man. And I don't know how much of that was the Texans defense making him look good. God, the replay of that first touchdown. And I don't know if that was Rippon or Badgett. No, that was Rippon. Rippon had all the good plays, right? Badgett was terrible for her first couple of series, and then Rippon came in there and tore things up.
The Rippon to the Johnson connection. Ripping
that Colin
Johnson.
Yeah. That first touchdown, the replay was not kind to those Texans defenders in the secondary. Like, they all had their eyes in the back. There's like three of them had their eyes in the backfield, and the receiver ran right up the seam.
That's my biggest concern, even though, it's the backups, it's rookies, it's all that, but the mental errors in coverage and the bad reads on play action last year were the thing that kept that Texans defense from being really good.
Mm-hmm.
And there were those same issues last night. So most of your starters weren't playing. I'm not panicking about it or anything, but that's the thing that you hope you don't see from the starters.
Do you like the new kickoff rules based on what we saw last night? Like, where are you?
I'm holding in reserve. I think that my biggest takeaways were, one, that it is going to be really hard to police the offsides. As Joe Buck pointed out, it's kind of like a baseball replay where you're trying to figure out if the play was made at second base before a runner crossed home plate.
Yeah.
Like, one official can't keep an eye on both things at the same time. And you got to piece it together afterwards. And then the other is, I don't think that this is going to prevent injuries. Like, every single tackle.
No, there were some hard hits, dude.
A defender kind of bent over backwards in a really precarious position. So I'm laying in wait and see exactly how all this plays out.
Boy, they were celebrating it on the broadcast last night. You know, like, oh, here it comes, the new kickoff. And every time, they were into it. They were into it big time last night. So, new kickoff rules in full effect last night. I like your asbestos analogy that you made earlier in the show.
Yeah, it's like it's a safety measure that actually is still doing harm.
Tremendously unsafe.
It's the asbestos of safety measures on special teams. You're like, oh, we're protected from fire. But you are getting lung cancer, by the way.
Yep. Text message, Seth is 1,000% correct about Davis Mills. There you go. You got some support there, Seth.
We found the one. That's the first text you've read supporting me all
day
long.
There's been others on here. It's kind of split on how people feel about Mills' night last night. But you make a pretty good pitch for that. did not look nearly as good as the box score may have led you to believe it looks.
He was bailed out on half those completions. Yeah. They weren't good. Okay, so Matt Schaub, it used to drive me insane when people would call Matt Schaub an accurate quarterback because his completion percentage was good, but it was the scheme getting guys wide open and then Matt Schaub throwing the ball behind guys but them still catching it. So that's where I think that Davis Mills did do a good job of executing the scheme and understanding where to go with the ball. He did a really good job of that. That's good. But he can't negate some of those good decisions with his bad throws and bad decisions. That doesn't play out well over the fourth quarter, over four quarters versus starters.
How did the city of Houston become ground zero for this sports phenomenon when we have not seen this in the last few years in any other city in sports? We will tell you what that is coming up.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Hey, real quick, before we get to the thing that Houston has become ground zero for, the one thing I forgot to mention that I actually teased into the previous segment, the thing that I thought was really cool that wound up on the broadcast last night, Seth, where if I'm a Buffalo Bills fan, I'm like, oh, or a Minnesota Vikings fan, I'm like, ah. Stephon Diggs out there dapping up the teammates, man. Stephon Diggs doing all the same things on the sidelines that he's been doing out at training camp.
Yeah, I don't get like preening about a guy acting cool in training camp. Like, there's no part of Buffalo fans that are like, oh, yeah, he was a complete a-hole when he first showed up that first training camp. None of them say that. None of them. They all recognize and understand that things were really cool those first 2 years. So I think Bills fans, who are more divided on the Diggs stuff anyway than I think a lot of people think, I think they look at it as like, yeah, that's how he was with us. It's largely the issues with Stephon Diggs came after 2.5 years on the team, and it's not going to be a factor this year at all. I think most Bills fans would say, yeah, He was really, really cool the first year.
I'm going to ignore everything you just said for the last minute and choose to believe that Bills fans are somewhere right now green with envy over this version of Stephon Diggs that You're we like, have here in Houston.
Can you believe he's acting exactly the same way he did in the first training camp with
Bills? No.
How come we didn't get that version of it? Oh, yeah, we did.
Because most of these people have been dropped on their heads through a flaming table. They can only remember as far back as last year.
Yeah.
So they're like, man, that guy was a jerk.
Where the real gloating would come in is if Josh Allen takes a step backwards as a receiver, as a quarterback this year.
Yeah.
What do you think? You know, that's where if like, okay, without Stephon Diggs, because yeah, I know Stephon Diggs wasn't the focal point of the offense in the back third of the season last year, but he was definitely a factor. He was definitely an element in the way teams played coverages and everything. So if Josh Allen, with a loss of not just him, but also Gabe Davis.
Yeah, man.
And they drafted Keon Coleman, who I'm curious to see exactly how well he integrates into the offense. I don't know if he's
I've seen that training camp thing where they show like two plays he makes at training camp. You're like, Keon Coleman is piecing the Bills secondary in training camp.
Yeah.
Like, all right. These are two nice plays that I saw right there. What's the concern level on Josh? You talk to people who have a vested interest in that. What's the concern level about Josh Allen going forwards or backwards this year?
Oh, it was all Josh Allen, no Steph Diggs.
Really?
When it came to, yeah, Josh Allen made Steph Diggs. Yeah that's those are people on the internet who come at me when I say anything nice about Stephon Diggs.
Yep.
But that's the least educated take that people have.
The odds makers think the Bills are going to be just fine. They're like a top five Super Bowl team on the odds board right now.
Yeah, Sean McDermott gets fired midseason, I think.
Yeah.
I would say he'd be my favorite for one of the first coaches to get fired.
I thought it was going to start happening last year, and I looked right for a while, and then they went on that run at the end of the year to where they ended up getting the 2 seed, I think, in the AFC. So as the Astros were DFAing Rafael Montero earlier this week, a lot of talk was made, similar to when Jose Abreu got DFA'd, that, well, this is what happens when you don't have a GM. You know, a lot with the Montero thing, a lot of it was now we can close the book on the winter of Bagwell and Crane, like with no GM there. And I'm thinking to myself, man, a lot of this stuff sounds really familiar, like bad contracts given out, not really good explanations for the contracts. I'm like, man, this sounds so familiar. Oh, that's right. The Houston Texans did kind of the same thing back in 2019 when they tried to hire Nick Caserio. They couldn't. And they said, well, Bill and Jack, you go ahead and run things here. And I cannot think of, and I racked my brain, Seth, and I looked it up, and I used my Google machine and everything else. I cannot think of another instance in recent years where a team willfully just decided to go ahead and start making moves without a conventional GM in the building at all.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And other than these two, why did it have to be Houston where they both happened? They both happened within 2 years of each other. We got this dynamic here.
I think, I don't know. Maybe it's our can-do spirit in this city. Maybe it imbues people with, maybe it kind of filters into the executives.
Yeah, maybe.
And they feel like, this is a state where people just went and they dug a hole in the ground and got rich.
Yes.
You know, there's just a lot of people striking out and doing it on their own.
Outside the box thinking.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Outside the box thinking.
Outside the box thinking.
Or just like we see it. We're smart people who know how to do this job that other smart people do 18 hours a day. So we can do a better job than they do because we're thinking outside the box.
The two disasters I'll use just as maybe a bit hyperbolic in the case of the Astros, but I think it's interesting. Like, they fired Brian Gaine. I think there's some similarities to it. Like, Brian Gaine hadn't done anything, I think, to justify getting fired. Similar to, like, I don't think James Click had done anything that would merit him not coming back as the GM, especially in retrospect. He made some moves that they're still benefiting from to this day in some of the trades that he made.
The biggest thing that Brian Gaine didn't do, though, was just he was not active. I mean, he was the opposite of Caserio. He didn't have a single draft day trade. There were elements there where it did look like maybe he was out over his skis a little bit in terms of just going from being a personnel person to the actual GM.
Yes, and again, and that's, I'm glad you brought that up. Again, another similarity between the two is that, you could say one way to couch that is Brian Gaine wasn't aggressive enough.
Yeah.
One way to couch the reason that I think James Click didn't really last with Jim Crane is he didn't really have that same gene that Crane does, maybe to Crane's own detriment, he's been this way, but where aggressiveness and big moves are the rule of the day, you know?
Right, right. And I think in the Bills, the Texans situation, it was, I think Bill O'Brien probably getting frustrated with Brian Gain for that reason. And yeah. And we also know, like, I mean, O'Brien, you know, he says and admits now that he can't be a GM, but I don't know if as a coach he can coexist with a GM, because he's the kind of guy that keeps receipts and keeps track of, like, oh, you were wrong about this guy, you're an idiot, without remembering all of the guys he was wrong about himself. There was somebody in the organization didn't like the fact that the GM wasn't as active as he should be.
Which job, if you had to pick a GM job to take, let's pretend that from a sports standpoint, baseball or football, you're perfectly trained to build a roster in either sport. You know, you've got enough acumen and know-how to build a roster in either sport. Would you rather take over a situation like Nick Caserio did back in 2021, where it's a total teardown, the issues that are in place are not of your doing, they're a previous GM that was terrible at their job, and you probably have a little bit of room to maneuver to try to build that team in your vision, in your image? Or would you rather take the job Dana Brown did, where it's already a championship level team, there's a couple real big warts on the team that are the owners doing, but by and large you're still going to be competing for World Series championships or be in that conversation for the next several years?
I think I had to simplify this because there's about eight facets that come to mind. For one, Caserio, I mean, the biggest thing that he had thrown on his lap that ultimately ended up being the best thing for the team was that he showed up to the job and found out that the quarterback wanted to be traded.
Yes.
And then also found out a whole bunch of other stuff about the quarterback.
Right.
And that somehow that all worked out for the better. I don't know if I would have wanted that. I did like that, like going back and being honest with it, I don't think I would have wanted that. I would have known that I was in for a turnaround, but I thought I'd probably, Caserio took the job probably thinking like, yeah, well, we got a quarterback at least. Because that worked out freakishly well. I would say, I think that I would almost always take the football situation there, just because it's easier to have a quick turnaround in football.
Mm-hmm.
And even though the GM needs to be focused on 3, 4, and 5 years out, some of the changes that you make can kick in faster in football. In baseball, likewise, you're only going to be judged, you should be judged on what happens 3, 4, and 5 years from now.
Right.
But when you're taking over a team like the Astros that's already playing at a very high level, you're going to be blamed for all of the weaknesses or anything that happens 2, 3, and 4 years out. When really, like with the Astros, it might be more of a 4 or 5 year time horizon, because you're trying to restock. You're trying to restock a pipeline while also maintaining a championship caliber run. And like, let's say if it works out this year with some of the moves you made at the trade deadline, you did weaken yourself for 3 or 4 years down the line.
Yeah,
and Dana Brown will get blamed for that.
Yeah.
Without it necessarily being his fault when he's supposed to be trying to win a championship this year.
Yeah, mine would be Caserio. I would take the Caserio job. I would have taken, if you said you can have the Texans job on January 8th, 2021, and again, at that time, Nick Caserio didn't know that Deshaun Watson was ready to request the trade, or Dana Brown taking the job in late January 2023. The sport doesn't matter to me as much as it does the environment that I need to operate in. And I just think it's night and day. Nick Caserio walks into a situation. Now, granted, Easterby was still in the building, but Nick was able to wait that out, and Jack's out of the building now. So that,
well,
I guess,
I think Nick had to, he had to learn.
Yes.
It took him about a year, I think, perhaps, to figure out exactly what the reality of the situation was.
Agreed. I think, even with Easterby in the building, you've got an owner that ultimately at the end of the day is going to let you do your thing in Cal McNair, who is going to spend the money where you want to spend the money. I know there's a salary cap, so, you know, spending on players is something that's already governed, but I'm talking about things behind the scenes. Like, Cal is going to give you the resources to be successful. With Dana, it's not just that you're walking into a situation where the owner made some strange decisions and mistakes that are impacting your ability to build a team or construct a... You're walking into this situation where there's three other people in the owner's ear. Like, where do I fit into this whole thing? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, why is Reggie Jackson here? What is Jeff Bagwell doing talking? Like, I'm the general manager of this team.
You know what? Ultimately, it's kind of like the Falcons situation this offseason, where people were wondering why the Falcons wouldn't hire Bill Belichick. And I think the very reason they didn't offer him a job might have been an indication that there was, it might not have been a good fit for Belichick, because it sounded like all of the front office people were, it seems to me that the front office people in Atlanta were paranoid about what Belichick would do and how much control he would have when he came in. And then Belichick would have been dealing with that same dynamic of like, oh, we got three different dudes that the owner wants to listen to while I'm trying to recommend some of these wholesale changes.
Yep.
What the hell am I fighting? Like, do I have to fight every single time I want to make an improvement? So it might have been the best for all parties involved that Belichick didn't get that job.
Do you think he coaches again, Belichick?
He's doing at least four media gigs this year.
Yeah.
And we talked about this on the pregame show a little bit yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
You seem to think like, well, these seem like pretty easy media gigs.
Yes.
I looked at it as these look like media gigs that Belichick is going to spend 14 hours a day preparing for.
Yeah.
Especially the fantasy one is a lot of just him breaking down game plans and in-game decisions and everything. I think that like a lot of people, I think like, you know, Gruden had talked about this and other guys in broadcasting that went back into coaching have said, you get an opportunity in broadcasting that you never get as a coach, and that you get to see and you get to talk to a lot of people about what's going on that week with their team, and you get exposed to different perspectives that maybe you don't because you're in your own little silo your entire year. I think he uses the broadcasting as a way to kind of gain some perspective and maybe gain some edges and that he had blind spots to before, and then goes back into
He's
it.
He's back
a year
next
or two.
Year. Yeah. 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 I mean, he won't wait as long as Gruden, but if he were to do that, he'd be in his mid 80s. You know, Gruden was away for a long, long time from coaching.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see. I'm anxious to see him in all these gigs, man, Belichick. It'll be interesting to see.
He was, yeah, the only extended time I've seen him really was on the Pat McAfee draft show, and I thought he was, he fit in with those guys.
Yes.
He's the only guy wearing a suit,
yep.
But he looked like he was having fun doing it.
You
That's
know,
it. Like he was there to be that guy.
Yes.
He was like the fun grandpa.
Yep.
You know, they could give you some wisdom, but could also tell a dirty joke.
Speaking of, yes, exactly. Speaking of broadcasters, list has come out. Are these the criteria that are a good criteria to judge who the best loved, exact words, best loved sportscasters are? This list is wild. We will get to that coming up next.
Pendergast.
All right, top of the hour, we'll have more reactions to the Hall of Fame game last night. Maybe some overreactions. I've gotten a couple texts. I'm looking at the text page. There's a couple of what I think are overreactions to the Hall of Fame game. Keep in mind, this is a game of backups versus backups going on here. I don't think any final decisions were made for the roster based on last night. But there's a few people on the text page that may disagree. So we'll do that.
Give it to me.
At the top of the hour. We'll do it at 9 o'clock. I'll bounce these off you. We'll do that at the top of the hour. These studies are interesting, Seth. Who are the most popular male sports sports presenters, they call it, announcers. And, you know, you and I get these emails where you get these websites that base it on, this one in particular bases the popularity on Instagram followers, Google searches, and their net worth. And they come up with a score to determine who the most popular sportscasters are based on those three metrics.
I guess popular would be, I would have issues with the word popular, but they use the term most loved.
Most loved is what, yes, right.
Yeah, most loved.
Yeah.
I don't know about that, man. I just, I would go like, you go to the history of like talk radio in general, for instance. I think like, go back to Rush Limbaugh. I think Rush Limbaugh had a lot of listeners who actually hated him. You know, like they would just, he was just so good at what he did that he would tweak them so well that they would, people who hated Rush Limbaugh he was listened to, but not necessarily the most loved by the sum total of the masses.
Right, right. Yeah. So I'm looking at the top 10 right now. And you tell me if these people, these are the top 10, according to these metrics, most loved male sportscasters. Shaq is number one. And Shaq has more Instagram followers than the other nine on this list put together. And I'm not exaggerating. He might have more combined, like double than all of them combined on here.
I'm going to use, as my gauge, since the term is most loved.
Most loved.
I'm going to think, and the average sports fan does, if they sit in a quiet room and somebody mentions Shaq, Shaq's name to them, do they smile? Or do they think I kind of have a pleasant feeling? I would say that jibes.
Yeah,
I think
most 100%.
People, I think most people just feel like, even if they don't like respect him or anything, like, yeah, that big goofy galoot. Yeah.
There's nothing to not like about Shaq. Like, he's not controversial. Like, he walks into like a Best Buy. I don't know how many people know these stories or seen these videos. Like, he'll walk into a Best Buy or some store and just buy computers for people. You know what I mean? Like, he's like a...
It's usually Walmart, actually.
Is it Walmart?
Wasn't it Walmart that he would... Oh, no. Anyway.
I don't know. Whatever store it was. Yeah. But he would do that.
He was big on being a man of the people and, like, shopping at Walmart and everything. That's why he put out his shoes like he did. Yeah.
He was one of the first athletes on Twitter back in, like, 2007. And it was, like, groundbreaking that Shaq would go on Twitter. This is when he was playing for the Suns. And he would say, hey, the first one to meet me at the corner of whatever and whatever in Phoenix, I got 4 tickets for you to tonight's game. And that was like a groundbreaking thing back then, like this Twitter thing, man. So Shaq, thumbs up. Number 2 on the list, with over 14 million Google searches, 4 million Instagram followers, and a net worth of $90 million, Draymond Green.
Ah, Draymond. a man who did just recently say that the NBA compensation setup is set up to not let you get rich. Because you have to pay taxes. He blamed the tax code.
No.
For
and you have to pay fines. You get fined for things. Remember that? Like
he's basically the guy that gets fined more than anybody else was acting like everybody else was in the same boat that he was.
Yeah.
No, somebody else jumped in with the taxes part.
Yeah.
Like something that has nothing to do with the NBA. But with Draymond, I would put him in that same category of like Howard Stern and Rush Limbaugh. Many people love them, but many people also hate them, but they all pay attention to them.
Right.
So I think Draymond's in that same spot. So I wouldn't say most loved.
No. And I think he skews more towards not being loved by a lot of the people Googling.
I think more people hate listen to Draymond than they do love listen to him.
Probably. Okay. Number 3 on this list, Alex Rodriguez. Alex Rodriguez.
Oh, that's the worst one of them all. I don't know how many people in general like
at all
on Earth love A-Rod, like genuinely and deeply.
Forget about the broadcasting, right?
Like maybe his children and maybe one or two. I don't know. I would say that's he might be the most popular in terms of followers and what have you, but I don't think he's genuinely loved by all that many sports fans.
No, it's almost like his broadcasting career, because I think he's a decent broadcaster. I don't think he's great. I think he's decent. It has kind of made people forget that, like, no athlete has been punished more for PEDs than Alex. Like, Alex Rodriguez got thumped a couple times for PEDs.
And people didn't even, like, they didn't dislike him because of the PEDs. They disliked him just because he just seemed so phony.
He's
to
a
people.
Disingenuous
like, that was his public
person.
Persona. Yes. Just how, his public persona was just how phony he seemed. Whether he is or not, you know, that's up for debate, but that's how people perceived him.
Okay, so far.
But maybe it's changed now that he's on now that as a broadcaster, he is pretty popular as a broadcaster, but I don't think he's loved.
Yeah, so far, of the 3 we've named so far, 2 of them don't really fit the most love. Number 4, it's an interesting one, Pat McAfee.
Yeah, that's probably true, like in terms of people that like Pat McAfee.
I like
Pat McAfee in doses. I can know, like, I really do. Like, I really respect, like, what he's built and how good he is at his style of what he's doing. But I do think he's got legions of people who love him.
Yeah.
There's something about going to ESPN, though, that might have affected the love of some of his hardcore original viewers on YouTube.
I remember when he was a garage band and now he's playing big arenas and he sold out to the man.
Right, yeah, and he was always talking up how, you know, they're not part of the establishment. And then he goes and joins the establishment.
Yeah. I don't think McAfee gets hired for some of the gigs that he gets without the companies he works for having some real data as to how well liked. I mean, he's a color commentator on Monday Night Raw on WWE, and he's on College Game Day on Saturdays.
He's a very embraceable personality. I think for some people he's a bit much, but it's not like they think he's a jerk or something. It's just a little too much all the time. That's how I am with him. I can do it in doses.
Yeah, I'm the same. How Isaiah Thomas even wound up on this list, I don't even know. Is Isaiah Thomas a broadcaster right now? Is he on anything right now?
How does he have followers on any? Is he active on social media?
He's got 600. According to this, he's got 651,000 Instagram followers, 651K.
But there's got to be a boatload of sportscasters with way more followers than he does.
Yeah, again, it's three metrics. It's Google searches, Instagram, and then net worth. He's got a net worth of nine figures.
The net worth, which again, the best loved part, like rarely does somebody's net worth make them beloved,
dude.
Other than like charismatic billionaires who are on social media a lot. But other than that, when it comes to sports personalities, I don't think I've ever heard anybody say like, I love that guy. Have you seen how much money he made?
Right, right, right.
That's the reason I love him.
If anything, it's the opposite, right?
Yeah.
Number six, I think this one passes the smell test. And this is why I think I got this email sent to me by this outlet that does this, because the subject header to the email was Houston sportscaster among 10 most popular according to metrics. I thought it would be Jim Nantz that's in here.
Sketch?
No. Michael Strahan, who is...
It's so weird to call him.
I know. He really doesn't associate himself with
Houston.
Yeah,
he went to school here, but it's not like he's... that's not his... He doesn't ever identify himself as Houston.
I think he's incredibly well liked, though.
For sure. Yeah. So I disagree with the Houston part.
Right.
But in terms of most he's not loved. Like Jim Nantz, you know.
Yeah.
In terms of loved, I think people really like him. And then he's a crossover hit because he's on Good Morning America, which is like that opens you up to just such a huge portion of America that
yes.
most sportscasters don't have.
Dude, he hosts the $25,000 pyramid on the Game Show Network. Also, like that's Americana.
Sometimes when I see Strahan's success and all of that, I feel bad for Tiki Barber, because Tiki was kind of his ordained path at one point.
He was being groomed
for
it. Yeah,
people thought he would be the guy that was on the morning show, like the morning coffee show.
Right,
it could do more than just sports and everything.
Yes, and Tiki's doing fine for himself. But
he's not been a failure or anything. But Strahan has gotten like I think what a lot of people predicted that Tiki would be.
Strahan is on Fox doing football, ABC doing Good Morning America, and the Game Show Network doing the pyramid. He probably makes like $30 million a year. You know, like he probably makes
and
a
his
ton of
whole
money.
And honestly, he's one of those people in television that there's just a certain likability quotient.
Yeah.
That I don't know, like I'm sure they've got it boiled down to a science now, but he just on television, people just tend to like him.
Yes.
He's just got that kind of a personality. It's just flat out likability.
I want to skip down to one here. I don't want to spend too much time because we've gone through six of them. Stephen A. Smith is seventh on this list. I want to skip down to eighth on this list, because I think for the most part, this top 10, which includes Shannon Sharp at 9 and Paul Pierce at 10, I think for the most part, I look at them and I go, okay, there's a handful of these guys that truly are loved. Shaq, McAfee, I think, Strahan. I think Shannon Sharp, his image has gone positive with his broadcast. I think people really like him, especially because he was sitting across from Skip Bayless for so many years, yelling at Skip Bayless.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Right?
Yeah, I think most people liked him because he was the foil to Skip Bayless.
Yeah. And similarly, or the not similarly, but the opposite side, Draymond, A-Rod, Isaiah, Stephen A., maybe Paul Pierce, I think fall to the hated side. The one that is in the middle for me, and I will admit that 95% of the reason I am putting him in the middle is because Brandy likes him.
Yeah.
Tony Romo.
Yeah, this is the...
It's Tony Romo loved.
The one thing that drives a wedge between me and my wife is Tony Romo.
And I don't mean to bring it up on the show, but this is where we are. Yeah.
It's not like it's her ex-boyfriend or anything like that
Never
she won't stop
that.
Talking about. It's that she enjoys Tony Romo on the
right.
broadcasts, which drives me insane. Because he drives me insane on the broadcast.
So the question for you then is, do you think more people are Team Seth or more people are Team Brandy in this?
I think more people are Team Romo, because I think most people that are watching don't necessarily pick up on, know about, or care about the insanely stupid things he says at times. And like Brandy, they feel like, it feels like I'm like watching football at a party with a fun guy. He just makes the environment, which, and to be clear, Brandy is a very astute sports watcher.
Yes.
I like insist that she watch Astros games with me because she always picks up on things or hears things on the broadcast or within the game itself, because she's a coach, you know, like strategic stuff and everything that I might miss. That's what drives me especially insane about it. It's like, I'm like, Brandy, he knows nothing about these teams. You can tell he hasn't done a bit of homework on them.
Right.
He's saying the dumbest things out. How can you like him? I don't know. He's fun.
Yeah.
He's fun.
It's like your smartest friend just getting immersed in TikTok videos for 3 hours. Like, what are you doing over there? I'm just sitting here watching TikTok videos for 3 hours, 30 that seconds at a time.
I'm going to have to watch. Romo might be the guy I would least trust my wife to spend like an hour with away from me. You know, like I would George Clooney, anybody else like that. Yeah, go for it, Brandy. I don't know. Yeah, go skinny dipping. I know. I trust you. Romo, I'm not so sure.
Do you think Romo would even know that he had a shot, though? I feel like Romo, just like in terms of self-awareness of what's going on around him, like he's very flighty.
I wish I could throw out something irresponsible or something, but he's not. No, I don't think, you know what? Now I have to admit that, too. Yeah, you could probably trust him with your wife.
Yeah.
I don't think he'd actually make a move on your wife.
I don't think so either. All right.
Which you can't say for a lot of super successful men.
No. Certainly none that, with the net worths that I'm looking at in this email.
The thing that drives them in many directions at times.
Indeed. There's a lot of things you can Mad Lib into that.
That's why, yeah, but Romo's just kind of stumbled his way into success throughout his entire career without actually putting a lot of effort into it. And that's why I would trust him with my wife.
Very Forrest Gumpian, no doubt about
that.
All right, let's overreact a little bit. We've got reactions for the Hall of Fame game last night. Who made favorable impressions? Are there position groups being decided based on this? I've got a few texts here that are in that overreact mode. We'll overreact to the Hall of Fame game coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges. And acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Pendergast. All right, top of the hour, we'll have more reactions to the Hall of Fame game last night. Maybe some overreactions. I've gotten a couple texts. I'm looking at the text page. There's a couple of what I think are overreactions to the Hall of Fame game. Keep in mind, this is a game of backups versus backups going on here. I don't think any final decisions were made for the roster based on last night. But there's a few people on the text page that may disagree. So we'll do that.
Give it to me.
At the top of the hour. We'll do it at 9 o'clock. I'll bounce these off you. We'll do that at the top of the hour. These studies are interesting, Seth. Who are the most popular male sports sports presenters, they call it, announcers. And, you know, you and I get these emails where you get these websites that base it on, this one in particular bases the popularity on Instagram followers, Google searches, and their net worth. And they come up with a score to determine who the most popular sportscasters are based on those three metrics.
I guess popular would be, I would have issues with the word popular, but they use the term most loved.
Most loved is what, yes, right.
Yeah, most loved.
Yeah.
I don't know about that, man. I just, I would go like, you go to the history of like talk radio in general, for instance. I think like, go back to Rush Limbaugh. I think Rush Limbaugh had a lot of listeners who actually hated him. You know, like he was just so good at what he did that he would tweak them so well that they would, people who hated Rush Limbaugh he was listened to, but not necessarily the most loved by the sum total of the masses.
Right, right. Yeah. So I'm looking at the top 10 right now. And you tell me if these people, these are the top 10, according to these metrics, most loved male sportscasters. Shaq is number one. And Shaq has more Instagram followers than the other nine on this list put together. And I'm not exaggerating. He might have more combined, like double than all of them combined on here.
I'm going to use, as my gauge, since the term is most loved.
Most loved.
I'm going to think, and the average sports fan does, if they sit... If they sit in a quiet room and somebody mentions Shaq's name to them, do they smile? Or do they think I kind of have a pleasant feeling? I would say that jibes.
Yeah,
I think most people just feel like even if they don't like respect him or anything, like, yeah, that big goofy galoot. Yeah.
There's nothing to not like about Shaq. Like, he's not controversial. Like he walks into like a Best Buy. I don't know how many people know these stories or seen these videos. Like, he'll walk into a Best Buy or some store and just buy computers for people. You know what I mean? Like, he's like a...
It's usually Walmart, actually.
Is it Walmart?
Wasn't it Walmart that he would...
Whatever store it was. Yeah, but he would do that.
He was big on being a man of the people and, like, shopping at Walmart and everything. That's why he put out his shoes like he did, yeah.
He was one of the first athletes on Twitter back in, like, 2007, and it was, like, groundbreaking that Shaq would go on Twitter. This is when he was playing for the Suns. And he would say, hey, the first one to meet me at the corner of whatever and whatever in Phoenix, I got four tickets for you to tonight's game. And that was like a groundbreaking thing back then, like this Twitter thing, man. So Shaq, thumbs up. Number two on the list, with over 14 million Google searches, 4 million Instagram followers, and a net worth of $90 million, Draymond Green.
Ah, Draymond. a man who did just recently say that the NBA compensation setup is set up to not let you get rich. Because you have to pay taxes. He blamed the tax code for...
And you have to pay fines. You get fined for things. Remember that?
The guy that gets fined more than anybody else was acting like everybody else was in the same boat that he was.
Yeah.
No, somebody else jumped in with the taxes part.
Yeah.
Like something that has nothing to do with the NBA. But, with Draymond, I would put him in that same category of like Howard Stern and Rush Limbaugh. Many people love them, but many people also hate them, but they all pay attention to them.
Right.
So I think Draymond's in that same spot. So I wouldn't say most loved.
No. And I think he skews more towards not being loved by a lot of the people Googling.
I think more people hate listen to Draymond than they do love listen to him.
Probably. Okay. Number three on this list, Alex Rodriguez. Alex Rodriguez.
Oh, that's the worst one of them all. I don't know how many people in general, like,
at all
on Earth, love A-Rod, like, genuinely and deeply.
I forget about the broadcasting, right?
Like, maybe his children maybe one or two. I don't know. I would say that's he might be the most popular in terms of followers and what have you, but I don't think he's genuinely loved by all that many sports fans.
No, it's almost like his broadcasting career, because I think he's a decent broadcaster. I don't think he's great. I think he's decent. It has kind of made people forget that, like, no athlete has been punished more for PEDs than Alex. Like Alex Rodriguez got thumped a couple times for PEDs,
and people didn't even like they didn't dislike him because of the PEDs. They disliked him just because he just seemed so phony.
He's
to
a
people.
Disingenuous
like, that was his public
person.
Persona. Yes. Was just how his public persona was just how phony he seemed. Whether he is or not, you know, that's up for debate. But that's how people perceived him.
Okay, so
maybe, but maybe it's changed now that he's on now that as a broadcaster. He is pretty popular as a broadcaster, but I don't think he's loved.
Yeah, so far, of the three we've named so far, two of them don't really fit the most love. Number four, it's an interesting one, Pat McAfee.
Yeah, that's probably true. Like, in terms of people that like Pat McAfee.
Yeah.
I like Pat McAfee in doses. Doses. I can know, like, I really do, like, I really respect, like, what he's built and how good he is at his style of what he's doing. But I do think he's got legions of people who love him.
Yeah.
There's something about going to ESPN, though, that might have affected the love of some of his hardcore original viewers on YouTube.
I remember when he was a garage band and now he's playing big arenas and he sold out to the man.
Right, yeah, and he was always talking up how, you know, they're not part of the establishment. And then he goes and joins the establishment.
Yeah. I don't think McAfee gets hired for some of the gigs that he gets without the companies he works for having some real data as to how well liked. I mean, he's a color commentator on Monday Night Raw on WWE, and he's on College Game Day on Saturdays.
He's a very embraceable personality. I think for some people, he's a bit much, but it's not like they think he's a jerk or something. It's just it's a little too much all the time. That's how I am with him. I can do it in doses.
Yeah, I'm the same. How Isaiah Thomas even wound up on this list? I don't even know. Is Isaiah Thomas a broadcaster right now? Is he on anything right now?
How does he have followers on any? Is he active on social media?
He's got 600. According to this, he's got 651,000 Instagram followers. 651K.
But there's got to be a boatload of sportscasters with way more followers than he does.
Yeah, again, it's three metrics. It's Google searches, Instagram, and then net worth. He's got a net worth of nine figures.
The net worth, which again, the best loved part, like rarely does somebody's net worth make them beloved, other than like charismatic billionaires who are on social media a lot. But other than that, like when it comes to sports personalities, I don't think I've ever heard anybody say like, I love that guy. Have you seen how much money he made?
Right.
That's the reason I love him.
If anything, it's the opposite, right?
Yeah.
Number six, I think this one passes the smell test. And this is why I think I got this email sent to me by this outlet that does this, because the subject header to the email was Houston sportscaster among 10 most popular according to metrics. I thought it would be Jim Nantz that's in here. Michael Strahan, who is...
That's so weird to call him.
I know. He really doesn't associate himself with
Houston.
Yeah,
he went to school here, but it's not like he's... that's not his... He doesn't ever identify himself as Houston.
I think he's incredibly well-liked, though. You know, like
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. So I disagree with the Houston part.
Right.
But in terms of, he's
most
not
loved.
Like Jim Nantz, you know. Yeah. But, yeah, in terms of loved, I think people really like him. And then he's a crossover hit because he's on Good Morning America, which is like that opens you up to just such a huge portion of America that most sportscasters don't have.
Dude, he hosts the $25,000 pyramid on the Game Show Network also. Like, that's... It's Americana.
Sometimes when I see Strahan's success and all of that, I feel bad for Tiki Barber, because Tiki was kind of his ordained path at one point when he retired.
He was being groomed for it, yeah.
People thought he would be the guy that was on the morning show, like the morning coffee show.
Right.
It could do more than just sports and everything.
Yes. And Tiki's doing fine for himself. But
he's not been a failure or anything. But Strahan has gotten, like, I think what a lot of people predicted that Tiki would be.
Strahan is on Fox doing football, ABC doing Good Morning America, and the Game Show Network doing the pyramid. He probably makes like $30 million a year. You know, like he probably makes
and
a
his
ton of
whole
money.
And honestly, he's one of those people in television that there's just a certain likability quotient that I don't know, like I'm sure they've got it boiled down to a science now, but he just on television, people just tend to like him.
Yes.
He's just got that kind of a personality. It's just flat out likability.
I want to skip down to one here. I don't want to spend too much time because we've gone through six of them. Stephen A. Smith is seventh on this list. I want to skip down to eighth on this list, because I think for the most part, this top 10, which includes Shannon Sharp at 9 and Paul Pierce at 10, I think for the most part, I look at them and I go, okay, there's a handful of these guys that truly are loved. Shaq, McAfee, I think, Strahan. I think Shannon Sharp, his image has gone positive with his broadcast. I think people really like him, especially because he was sitting across from Skip Bayless for so many years, yelling at Skip Bayless.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Right? Yeah, I think most people liked him because he was the foil to Skip Bayless.
Yeah. And similarly, but the opposite side, Draymond, A-Rod, Isaiah, Stephen A., maybe Paul Pierce, I think fall to the hated side. The one that is in the middle for me, and I will admit that 95% of the reason I am putting him in the middle is because Brandy likes him.
Yeah.
Tony Romo.
Yeah, this is the...
Tony Romo loved.
The one thing that drives a wedge between me and my wife is Tony Romo.
And I don't mean to bring it up on the show, but this is where we are. Yeah.
It's not like it's her ex-boyfriend or anything like that
Never
she won't stop
that.
Talking about. It's that she enjoys Tony Romo on the broadcasts, which drives me insane because he drives me insane on the broadcast.
So the question for you then is, do you think more people are Team Seth? Or more people are Team Brandy in this?
I think more people are Team Romo because I think most people that are watching don't necessarily pick up on, know about, or care about the insanely stupid things he says at times. And like Brandy, they feel like, it feels like I'm like watching football at a party with a fun guy. He just makes the environment, and to be clear, Brandy is a very astute sports watcher.
Yes.
I like insist that she watch Astros games with me because she always picks up on things or hears things on the broadcast or within the game itself because she's a coach, you know, like strategic stuff and everything that I might miss. That's what drives me especially insane about it. It's like, I'm like, Brandy, he knows nothing about these teams. You can tell he hasn't done a bit of homework on them.
Right.
He's saying the dumbest things out. How can you like him? I don't know. He's fun.
Yeah.
He's fun. Yeah.
It's like your smartest friend just getting immersed in TikTok videos for 3 hours. Like, what are you doing over there? I'm just sitting here watching TikTok videos for 3 hours, 30
that
seconds
might be
at a time.
I'm going to have to watch. Romo might be the guy I would least trust my wife to spend like an hour with away from me. You know, like George Clooney, anybody else like that. Yeah, go for it, Brandy. I don't know. Yeah, go skinny dipping. I know. I trust you. Romo, I'm not so sure.
Do you think Romo would even know that he had a shot, though? I feel like Romo, just like in terms of self-awareness of what's going on around him, like he's very flighty.
I wish I could throw out something irresponsible or something, but he's not. No, I don't think. You probably. You know what? Now I have to admit that too. Yeah, you could probably trust him with your wife.
Yeah,
I don't think he'd actually make a move on your wife.
I don't think so either. All right.
Which you can't say for a lot of super successful men.
No.
By the way.
Certainly none with the net worths that I'm looking at in this email.
The thing that drives them in many directions at times. Yes.
Indeed. There's a lot of things you can mad lib into that.
That's why, but Romo's just kind of stumbled his way into success throughout his entire career without actually putting a lot of effort into it. And that's why I would trust him with my wife.
Very Forrest Gumpian, no doubt about
that.
All right, let's overreact a little bit. We've got reactions for the Hall of Fame game last night. Who made favorable impressions? Are there position groups being decided based on this? I've got a few texts here that are in that overreact mode. We'll overreact to the Hall of Fame game coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges. And acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.